You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is Dr. Roberto Avant-Mir, one of our professors here in the communication department, and I'm very proud to say that he is one of my former students, Robbie, as I know him, and I'm very honored to see everything that he's accomplished. He's published, he's written a book, Rock the Nation, and he's an expert in various media images, and he's going to talk a little bit about today about something that's going on here in El Paso. I want to remind you that the views expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KTEP. Robbie, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for, of course, everything that you've done for our students. And you've exposed them to a lot of different styles of music and looking at music from a different perspective. And in fact, I know you did something on Rock en Español, and you published the book
Rock the Nation.
And he's a published professor. He's going to read his little take on the new baseball team, and it's called Of Mice and Mascots.
Thank you, Louis. Part one. They had me at baseball. That's all they had to say. When I heard baseball, I was caught hook, line, and sinker. The new El Paso AAA baseball team didn't need to work very hard to get my attention or to get my dollars. They had me. They had me at the very word baseball. It was automatic for me to be excited about the new baseball team because I am a baseball fan. It's a sport that I've always loved. Unlike most people, perhaps, I actually watch baseball on TV, and I go to games. As a child, I played baseball with other neighborhood kids on the street for the house where my mother still lives to this day. We spray-painted bases onto the street. The teenage boys hit tennis balls to the next street over to get a home run. I also played catch in our front yard and at my friend Johnny's house next door. I collected baseball cards, too. They're still at my mom's house somewhere. I also went to my dad's softball games at Fields in Buena Vista and Marwood Park. He was always in leagues with guys from Asarco, Border Steel, and the cement plant. Years ago, I discovered an old black and white picture of a great uncle who was a baseball coach for one of my uncle's teams. The picture was taken in the early 1950s, probably somewhere in Smeltertown, and the youth team was sponsored by the El Paso Natural Gas Company, one of those kinds of team photos. It's worn around the edges and has a tear in the bottom of one corner, but I can see my uncle and great-uncle pretty clearly. I guess you can say baseball is in my blood. Besides my father, my uncles, my great-uncles, I also played baseball in leagues on and off. I have a picture of myself as a young kid when I played at games at Cloudview Park by Coronado High School on the west side. Both Cloudview and Marwood have different names now, but I knew them under different names and simply as baseball fields. These days, my 8-year-old son plays on those fields at Cloudview. He plays baseball now, and I think he loves it as much as I did at his age, maybe even more. My daughters can play baseball, too. We sometimes get into wiffle ball games in the backyard. My oldest daughter began playing baseball when we lived in Boston and rooted for the Red Sox, our adoptive baseball team from our adoptive hometown. A few years ago, when we moved back to El Paso to be back in the sun and back around our family, my daughter stopped playing organized baseball. She went girly, quote-unquote, and wasn't interested in baseball anymore when we moved back home to El Paso. But my son, who was also first played when we lived in Boston, has continued that interest, and his interest seems to be growing, which is why I sign him up for baseball every year, spring and fall. It's why I drive him to games and practices, why I volunteer as an assistant coach on his teams, and why we watch baseball together. He loves to hit home runs, and he thinks he's better than Big Papi David Ortiz. That love for baseball is why we went to El Paso Diablos games together, too. We went to several Diablo baseball games over the past few years. When I was a kid, our logo was a red devil with a pitchfork. Anybody remember those days? My son and I went to lots of games together in the past few years, which is why I made sure to take him to the last Diablos game this past season, because we heard that the Diablos might go away. We heard that they might be sold or just move that team, because they wouldn't be able to compete with the incoming AAA baseball team. So we went to those final Diablos games. He always wanted to linger after to try to get autographed balls from the players. And he did. He has a couple of baseballs signed by Diablos players. One time he even got a signed bat. He even collects baseball cards too. Needless to say, we were very excited about the new team. The news of a AAA baseball team coming to the Sun City was a big deal for us. We were excited and looking forward to next season, to the new stadium, to going to games downtown, to the new team and mascot. We were both hooked. They had us at the very word baseball. And let me also admit here that I know that many people in El Paso were upset about the new team, about the outsiders trying to sell us a new team, about the new stadium costs, about taxpayer money, about political shenanigans and behind-the-scenes deals. I recognize all of that. But what can I say? I'm a baseball fan. With all apologies to the people that were against the baseball team or the costs of the new stadium or the political wranglings, what can I say? I heard all of that news and I knew all of that stuff, but I admit it. They had me at baseball. Part 2. In recent months, however, my passion and zeal for baseball has been tempered with the announcement of the team name for the new team coming to El Paso. As we all heard earlier this fall, they are to be called the El Paso Chihuahuas. This new team mascot is a huge disappointment for me because while I am a baseball fan at heart, I am also a media scholar. I happen to be a media scholar who actually studies mediated representations of Mexicans, Hispanics, and Latinos. In other words, I study media images and I do research on media representations. My academic research on mediated representations is exactly what troubles me about the new name. My scholarly research has taught me that there is a long history of mediated representations in the United States in which Mexicans, Mexican Americans, Hispanics, and Latinos are depicted through exaggerated stereotypes and images. From criminals, ugly bad guys, and banditos in cowboy stories and Western novels in the late 1800s, to those mirror images in Western tales and films in the 1900s, and later television shows, all the way up to the 1960s and arguably to recent decades, Mexicans have been represented through a very narrow range of images and outright stereotypes. Mexicans or Mexican-American women also have a long history of skewed representations, from floozies in border town cantinas to loose women that lust after white men. The depictions of Mexican women haven't been much better. Of course, if we update the conversation to more recent representations in media, you don't have to be a media scholar to know the types and stereotypes. As many of us know, Mexicans and Hispanics are often represented as maids, gardeners, drug dealers or gangsters, or illegal immigrants. The list goes on, of course, but that's just a short list for the moment. Likewise, there are other ways that Mexicans or Hispanics are often represented in U.S. popular culture more recently. In some recent and ongoing research on Latino stereotypes in cartoon images and characters that appear in children's programming, we can add to the list of people with exaggerated accents in English. We can also add the image of pistol-packing roosters with ridiculously long names and several aliases, such as Panchito Pistoles in the Disney movie The Three Caballeros in 1944. Just a few years later, in the 1950s, the U.S. witnessed the debut of another infamous Mexican cartoon character, the Warner Brothers cartoon mouse Speedy Gonzalez. Speedy Gonzalez was drawn up as the fastest mouse in all of Mexico, and to be honest, must have seemed really cool for many of us young children who were surprised and yet happy to see any Latino or Hispanic character on mainstream television. We should not forget, however, that Speedy was a Mexican mouse who was small and brown, who spoke English poorly with an exaggerated accent, who was a Latin lover of sorts, who lived in the trash, who begged people for cheese, who ran around screaming, "Yipa, yipa!" who ran around with a bunch of side characters like his slow, lazy cousin, Slowpoke Rodriguez, and various other mice characters who ran around scheming and plotting in order to steal cheese from their unsuspecting victims. In other words, Speedy was an amalgamation of stereotypes. Interestingly, if you think about Speedy and his friends, Speedy Gonzalez cartoons might actually have been one of the first associations of Mexicans with gangs, another TV movie stereotype for Mexicans that would become common after the 1970s. Interestingly, Speedy Gonzalez, popular from the 1950s and especially throughout the 60s and 70s, was supposed to have been retired in the 1990s for fear of being offensive to Mexicans because of his stereotypical nature. We know, however, that the Speedy character appeared in various other movies and cartoons over the years, even appearing in Warner Brothers' Looney Tunes cartoons in the 2000s. In other words, my young children have seen Speedy Gonzalez in recent years. Instead of Mexican mice, Mexicans appearing as dogs also began around 1955 through an image that was not radically different from the image of a small, dirty brown mouse. In the same year that Speedy Gonzalez was born, Disney released Lady and the Tramp, an animated feature about talking dogs, including a sleepy, Mexican-accented Chihuahua dog who was not very bright. In other words, another image of Mexicans, where Mexicans provide comic relief. By the 1960s, Mexican characters as comic relief was common in Hollywood and on mainstream TV. And in the 1960s was born another cartoonish character, the Frito Bandito. Created by the Frito-Lay Snack Company in 1967, the Frito Bandito advertising campaign was created as a fun or funny cartoon image of a Mexican to help sell Frito's corn chips to children across the USA. It is worth noting that this Frito Bandito, by the way, had a gold tooth, beard stubble, unkempt hair, an angry face, and he shot up his guns like a bandito. Naturally, he spoke English with an exaggerated Mexican accent. Oh, and he also robbed people at gunpoint, taking their Frito's corn chips, and he even worried that he was being investigated by the FBI. One particular advertisement from the 1960s, a wanted poster, said that he loves crunchy Frito's corn chips, and that he's sneaky, cunning, and clever. On a side note, the Frito Bandito was voiced by Mel Blanc, the very same cartoon voice actor who provided the voice for Speedy Gonzalez. After public protests from Mexican and Chicano activist groups, however, the Frito Bandito was updated around 1969. The Frito-Lay Company removed his gold tooth and his beard stubble. His hair was combed and he had a nicer, kid-friendly, family-friendly face. His guns were even put away in his holsters. What is particularly interesting about this case, to me, was that this character who was seen or understood by Mexicans and Mexican-Americans as an awful stereotype of Mexicans was protested, and that the protests were actually somewhat successful. So much so that the Frito Bandito was finally laid to rest around 1971. For years, Frito-Lay had resisted the pressure from Chicano groups and other Mexicans, saying that the image was fun, innocent, kid-friendly, and humorous. But under pressure from activist groups, Frito-Lay finally removed the character in 1971. Of course, the list of Mexican stereotypes could go on through the decades. There are scholars who have provided a wealth of knowledge regarding the long history of Mexican stereotypes in Hollywood films, U.S. television, and popular culture. For the moment, it should suffice to note that the depiction of Mexicans as small brown mice and then small brown dogs goes back decades. As I argue in my research, it is neither new nor creative nor imaginative. Mexicans as mice or dogs is a decades-old trope, one with a very, very long tail. Moving fast forward, it is no wonder then that in September of 1997, Taco Bell used the image of a small brown chihuahua dog for a TV commercial, in which a chihuahua said with the heavy Mexican accent, "Yo quiero Taco Bell." In early commercials, he could be seen wearing a funny beret on his head, while in others he could be seen wearing a sombrero or was depicted as a bandito. Rumors were that Taco Bell retired the dog because of public pressure and protest, but that actually hasn't been confirmed by anybody. To this day, it remains something of a rumor. Nevertheless, neither should it be a surprise that Mexicans as small brown chihuahua dogs happened all over again in the 2000s when Disney returned to the stereotype game with the movie Beverly Hills Chihuahua. In this movie, a chihuahua from Beverly Hills who was pursued by her Mexican gardener, another Latin lover, finds herself in Mexico City, where she is kidnapped and held for ransom. Throughout Dog Mexico City, we are treated to images of Mexican poverty and images of Mexicans as street criminals and hustlers. I won't get into the particulars beyond this, since hearing the rest of the plot details could make us all sick. My point is simply that even in the 1990s and in the 2000s, a small brown chihuahua dog was and is still shorthand for Mexicans. Of course, we don't have to look very far to find more Mexican stereotypes on TV or in Hollywood movies. In the name of family-friendly entertainment and humor, and good fun, Disney has since then released Beverly Hills Chihuahua 2 in 2011, Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3 in 2012. Latino stereotypes are also visible in various other films, such as in the Puss in Boots character, an offshoot character from the Shrek 2 movie from 2004. Ever the Latin lover, Puss in Boots appeared in his own feature film in 2011, voiced by Antonio Banderas, of course. More recently, Mexican and Latino stereotypes are ever present in more contemporary and recent movies, such as this past summer's Despicable Me 2. Again, I've noted this in my own research, for example, in an article I wrote rather recently about the most recent Despicable movie. Mexicans as criminals, as bad guys, as filthy and unwanted, as scheming and plotting, devious and conniving. The fact is that stereotypes of Mexicans and Latinos still linger in U.S. popular culture and are so persistent that they have become invisible to most of us, hidden by their guise as kid-friendly images, family fun, humor, or just entertainment. Part 3. Let me return to a conversation that started this entire conversation. I actually led off this conversation by talking about baseball. As I mentioned at the outset, it was announced recently that the new El Paso baseball team would be called the El Paso Chihuahuas. For a city that is somewhere over 80% Mexican or Mexican-American, they chose a small brown Chihuahua dog as the mascot and to, quote-unquote, represent our community. Some of us in El Paso have been shocked and appalled by the new mascot and the images of a small brown dog that is supposed to represent who we are. Meanwhile, others, Mexicans included, quickly jumped at the chance to like the new logos on Facebook and to purchase their merchandise at the new store. For those of you that come from elsewhere or who are just hearing of this issue, it is worth noting that when it was announced, there was some criticism and a small bit of controversy. Almost immediately, some El Pasoans created a petition to appeal to the team owners to change the name. And some families, who had already paid thousands for season tickets, asked for their money back because of the new mascot and logo. Some of us have just been moaning and groaning that nobody fears Chihuahuas, or that the Chihuahua mascot is just silly or dumb. But in my opinion, what we have seen so far hasn't been nearly enough. Of course, they told us that it is too late. And they told us that the image and mascot cannot be changed. And they told us that many people really like the new mascot and the new logo. And they will continue to tell you that the image is supposed to represent the El Paso community in a quote-unquote positive way. And they will tell you that the mascot will bring fun, entertainment, and families to the new ballpark. And they will tell you that the new store is selling out of merchandise. And they will tell you that Chihuahua t-shirts and caps are being sold online and shipped to over 36 states across the U.S. And they will tell you that they reached 10,000 likes on Facebook within 24 hours. But I want to say that the Washington Redskins are popular too. The Washington Redskins have a Facebook page with many likers too. The Washington Redskins also have many fans in many states across the U.S. The Washington Redskins sell lots of merchandise, too. The Washington Redskins' name and logo are also supposed to honor a community. The Washington Redskins' mascot and logos are supposed to honor the idea of Native American or First Nation peoples. And I also want to ask, can successful marketing ploys and merchandise sales justify a stereotype? Does a family-friendly or kid-friendly image, movie, or cartoons mean that we should not care about images and representations? I want to submit that it doesn't and that we should care. On a related note, 20 years ago, I would have probably said that I didn't really care or that the mere idea of changing the name of a team like the Washington Redskins was outright impossible. I would have said that such a thing would never happen. No way, no how, not in my lifetime, maybe not ever. But today, I sit here, pleased that the tide is turning on the Washington Redskins. As many of us know, just as in the past few years the tide has turned for gay marriage and gay rights, and in the past few years the tide has also turned on racist mascot names like the Washington Redskins. Simply put, the world is changing. The times are changing. Things are different now. It may take 5 more or 10 more or 15 more years, but sometime in the near future the Washington Redskins will have to change their name. I now can see that such a name change will happen in our lifetime. And if history is any indication, I want to add that there is even much more hope. We know, for example, that in 1967 it must have seemed impossible for Mexican-American activists to take on the giant Frito-Lay company. We know that complaints, protests, or public pressure must have seemed like a drop in a bucket to the Frito-Lay corporation. But we also know that Frito-Lay gave in to the pressure and reformed the stereotyped image of a Mexican in 1969. And we know that the company retired the Frito Bandito in 1971. So quite simply, there is hope. There is work to be done, but there is hope. We may not change the world today or tomorrow or even next week or next year, but I do have hope that we have the guts to keep standing up for ourselves in the weeks to come, in the months to come, in baseball seasons to come, and in years to come. For example, for me, I won't be buying Chihuahua's merchandise. I hope we have the guts to try to make changes in our society. For whatever issue or in whatever context, I hope we have the guts to continue the struggle and to continue the fight for better treatment, for better conditions, for equality, for civil rights, and for eliminating media stereotypes. Because the worst thing that I can think of is that we just don't try, and that our children will someday find out that we didn't try or that we didn't speak up. Let that never be said of us, and let our children, our little cousins, our nephews and nieces, and our grandchildren inherit a better world, a better world where Mexicans and Hispanics are seen as more than just mice and dogs.
The views expressed during this interview are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KTEP. One of the other things, Robbie, that people have brought up when the name Chihuahuas came up, and this is nothing against the country of Mexico or the Mexican people, but some people were saying this is the United States, this is El Paso, and the fact that we're naming it after a state in Mexico is indicating further the stereotype that people have of El Paso and, you know, being a part of Mexico, as some people think.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I think it goes both ways, Louis. I think on the one hand, it is a bit of a stereotype to say, okay, we have a new team. And so, for example, the new team is going to have the name of Chihuahua. So it's a bit of a stretch, especially for people in the United States. You know, why do we have Chihuahuas in the name? I think it goes the other way, too. I think it can be sort of a positive thing. And I mean this in a really sincere way that, you know, in some ways, borders separate things where those separations don't exist. So borders can be false as much as they can be real. And so, you know, the idea that somehow the border is a line that sort of is automatic and that, you know, where things are clearly here or there, where we stop and they begin, that's not necessarily true either. I think it's a really complicated issue. I think it cuts both ways. But to be honest with you, my easy response to that is I think the people that must be working for the Chihuahuas, it seems to me like a very smart marketing thing, right? Not only are they trying to appeal to, you know, baseball fans in El Paso or families in El Paso and West Texas and New Mexico, but they're also looking at northern Mexico, the state of Chihuahua, and hoping people from the state of Chihuahua will come to the ballpark and watch baseball games. So, I mean, on that sense, it's a very clever marketing strategy.
And we all know that, you know, Mexico loves baseball.
Sure.
And we have some great baseball players who are Latin. The other thing, when you were talking about images and commercials, there are some Hispanic or Mexican-American people here who, unfortunately, perhaps, you know, through the generations, they've lost some of that language and the culture, and they don't know how to speak Spanish well. In fact, I remember we had a student here who wrote an editorial for or an article for The Prospector called Si Quiero Pero No Puedo. I want to, but I can't, because people automatically assume if your last name is Martinez or Martinez or Martinez that you speak Spanish.
Right.
And because of that, what I'm talking about as far as the advertising is a lot of the advertisers who want to reach out to the Latin community, they'll use like soccer or something else like that, not realizing that a lot of the Latin Americans here in the United States are just as American as everybody else. We're all Americans and, you know, they can't speak the language and they enjoy playing football. They enjoy video games and everything else. And so I remember my son once telling me, saying, you know, Dad, you know, I can't identify with some of these commercials that they're doing because I'm not a soccer player. I don't do those things that, you know, traditional Mexican families do. And
right.
But the advertisers just assume, as, again, the stereotype. And getting back, you know, my daughter, she is very light-skinned. In fact, I think, you know, because I've been accused of not being Mexican enough because I have a lot of European blood from my father's side. My mother is Mexican from Mexico. But I have French, Spanish, and Jewish blood, and a lot of Native American blood, too. And my daughter, who lives in Colorado Springs, one time was asked, really? You're Mexican,
mm-hmm.
but you're so beautiful and you're clean.
Wow.
And it's like, come on, you know?
Wow.
And so when you're getting back to Washington Redskins, people are wondering now, I guess, maybe even like, So is the Cleveland Browns named after Mexican people? You know? And people haven't thought about that. So in your research, and you know, and people might say, well, you're being too picky, but it seems like in every generation, every decade, you know, in the early 1900s, the Irish were being put down as immigrants, you know, and because of the religion, Catholic. And then in the 40s, the Italians, you know, were being put down. And then, of course, the Jewish people and African Americans and Chinese. And it seems like now it's our turn, you know, and we're going through
unfortunately, through that.
And but people, especially with social media now, it's very open, and as you were discussing the cartoons, if you look at some of these early Looney Tunes and Warner Brother cartoons, especially during the World War, they were very racist, very very you know, stereotypical of all that.
Yeah, and with regard to not just Mexicans, right? Disney as well as Looney Tunes and Warner Brothers, they had lots of those old cartoons had some really awful racist imagery. And we know that now, and you know, those things are filed away, and you can't find them very much anymore. Sometimes you might find them on YouTube, where you know somebody will post something, but they're you know, they're not showing those anymore. So they've gone away, right? And to me, it speaks to the fact that, you know, these big corporations, they don't want to be in the stereotyping game because it's bad business, right? Nobody wants to be known as somebody that's stereotyping this race or that ethnic group. So, you know, a great deal of why these racist images or whatever have gone away, it's because it's bad business to be in stereotyping nowadays, right? They should be trying to get away from it, and they have for the most part. There are things that you can't do in the ways that you cannot portray African Americans anymore. There are things that you can't do with regard to the way they portray Asian Americans anymore. There are things they cannot do anymore with, or they don't do anymore with regard to how women are portrayed. For some reason, this Latino one with Mexicans still continuing to be small brown dogs or mice, it doesn't go away. This it won't go away. I thought this one would have been gone a long time ago, but this one continues to linger, and that's kind of my point. For some reason, small brown dogs for Mexicans, it just continues in our popular culture.
And you know, another thing that you mentioned earlier, because they always put an accent in there, you know, and or in the Western movies, it was always they would always say señor or gracias. Mm-hmm. But when you have a Hispanic accent, people look down on you. But yet when you have a British accent, an Irish accent, what a beautiful accent. I love your accent.
Fancy. It's upper class.
Yeah. And unless you're a Spaniard, you know, like Ricardo Montalban, rich Corinthian leather, then it's better than rich Corinthian leather, you know. And I'm being a little bit sarcastic here, but, you know, that's the way it is, and I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us and speaking out on that. Thank you very much, Robbie.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate the conversation. And again, I'm just trying to raise some awareness and get some people thinking.
And once again, the views expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KTEP.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy is for sale.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.